From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Patrick Hoskin, in for Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made at 565 Blossom Road. That is where 500,000 pieces of fine art, collectibles, cars, sculptures, jukeboxes, furniture, vintage signs, and more occupy a 40,000 square foot warehouse space. It's not a gallery or a museum, but it is kind of both of those things that places artists and works. It was founded by Louis Perticone. It's long been a launching pad for artists and an incubator for their talents, as well as a themed space for parties, weddings, other events. There is a room dedicated to Marilyn Monroe and filled with artwork that reflects her. There's a room carefully styled after a 1960s firehouse, including an old fire engine. And if you've seen Casablanca, they've even got Rick's Cafe. This was due in large part to Perticone, who died in July after decades of work bringing that evolving vision to life. So we're here to talk about what is the future of Artisan Works as it continues on without its founder, and also to celebrate its founder. With him the entire time along that journey was CEO and co-founder Kimberly Trenholm, who joins us today. Kim, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for inviting us.
And we're also joined by some other folks from Artisan Works. We have Executive Director Jessica Palukowicz is here. Welcome.
Nice to be here.
And we have Jim Benjamin, who is a board member. So thanks for being here, Jim.
Thank you for inviting me.
I want to just kind of start up front with what might be a difficult question in terms of describing Artisan Works, right? Because I feel like that's one of the more difficult. So just to back up a little bit, Kim, you and I spent some time together last month. I wrote a piece for City Magazine reporting on Artisan Works. You can actually read that in our September issue, which is on newsstands now. We spent about two-ish hours together. You graciously gave me a two-hour tour, and I feel like I only just kind of scratched the surface. And part of that is because there's so much space. Almost every inch of the place is utilized with artwork or some sort of collectible. I feel like even having been in this space, I struggle to do it justice. But, you know, I'm sure you at this point you've probably become, you know, you probably have a good way of a good answer when someone asks you how to describe Artisan Works. So what do you usually say?
You know, I always hope for that magical answer to come to me. I would have to say that Artisan Works is a living experience, and it changes every time you visit. It's a place to experience creativity and innovation, and it's a real heartbeat of the arts community in Rochester. And you can't just visit and get it. You have to go multiple times. And I've been there every single day since the beginning, and I still wonder at new things that are found and new experiences. Because when visitors come, I have the benefit of seeing it through their eyes. And that's pretty special.
And when was that beginning, just to give a little bit of context?
We moved into that building in December of 1999.
Okay.
With about 240 packed boxes of artwork and collectibles up the stairs. There was no elevator.
Oh, wow. So then that's a great image, right? All these boxes, 250 boxes coming in, and then unpacking the boxes, figuring out how they're arranged. And then since then, in the 25, 26 years since, just having that collection, I mean, blossom, right? Not to go there, but it is Blossom Road.
Yes.
So to have the collection blossom, right? And then obviously to the space itself that Artisan Works occupies has also expanded too. For you, Jim, for you, Jessica, the first time that you both entered the space, can we maybe talk a little bit about that? Some just like it's a very sensory experience. Do you remember, either of you remember that first experience?
Well, yeah, I do, because it has to be almost 20 years ago when I was with Kodak and Xerox. We did parties there, and it was always just an amazing place, and Louis was an amazing person, and so I really fell in love with the place. Now, each time I go, I see something different, and I'm there every day, and you still see something different, and it's very uplifting. So it's just it's hard to describe, like you said. Mm-hmm. So I tell people they have to come and see it. Yeah.
And what about for you, Jessica?
I was completely blown away. I came in and I had never heard of Artists in Works before. And I was brought in to do some painting, construction type painting, not art painting. Mm-hmm. And I walked through, and in true Lewis form, he didn't stop. He just kept walking. There was no time to look around. It was just an incredible experience of going from one side of the complex to the other side of the complex. And I'm sitting here like, when is he going to tell me what I need to do? And 20, 30 minutes go by and you're just beep-bopping back around. And I understood how he got 50, 60,000 steps a day. He would just never stop walking back and forth, back and forth. And it was an incredible experience.
And maybe we should go back a little bit to, Kim, you're talking about moving into the space. Can you talk a little about where you moved from?
Sure. We moved from a little co-op gallery on Norris Drive. And when we decided to move into the industrial park, we made a commitment to not do the co-op thing anymore. We really wanted to make a commitment to the arts community and to artists. And we shifted toward buying artists' work. So Lewis was the brainchild on that. He called it the art incubation program. And he would buy a collection of an artist's work and he would give them a down payment on all of it and then a monthly stipend. And the purpose of that was so they would actually be getting paid for their artwork so they could keep creating, you know, and the funds would be for supplies to keep painting or sculpting or building or for their art studio, but just a more tangible way to keep them working at their craft. So that's when we moved into framing everything ourselves and purchasing all the work, and that gave light to our art lease to own program because mm-hmm. then we had more inventory to create that business. So.
And we talked a lot about what that program as well as what that program had led to Artisan Works accumulating as well as all the other ways in which, you know, Lewis was going out and getting art and all the ways that art was coming into the place and mm-hmm. being displayed there. Mm-hmm. It was funny. We were walking through and you said there's no space anywhere and every drawer is filled.
That's a fact.
And I'm just like, how do you manage? I mean, that sounds like a nice problem to have, but like, how do you manage that exactly?
Very carefully.
So is something's place in Artisan Works fixed? Is it always changing? Maybe we'll try something else. Maybe we'll move this. Maybe we'll bring something. I remember there was you talked about a collection of Beanie Babies and trying to figure out where to put that. And they eventually ended up in a big, it was like a chest, right?
Yes.
In a little living room arrangement. So is still this idea of trying new things and like, look, rearranging what the space can actually look like?
Yes. I think the theme that has been constant for Artisan Works from day one is that it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. And for example, the Art Lease to Own program, if a company comes in and they pick 100 pieces of artwork, 100 pieces of artwork for their new building, that means 100 pieces of artwork are leaving the building that we have to fill the space that it was in. So there's always this organic change of artwork, and sometimes that creates, oh, maybe we could change this space into a little bit of a different theme and bring that sculpture over from the other side of the building and things like that. So it's always been just an organic work in progress.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was never able to meet Lewis, but having gone through the space, being able to hear a lot of what you had to say about him, as well as talking to some other folks. And I feel like the space itself being a great representation of him. And, you know, when we were chatting, Kim, you called him a builder, and you can really see that on display in the place. Maybe, I don't know, any things come to mind just about conveying like a favorite story or something like that? Just because if we're talking about sort of, I mean, sort of here at the front of the conversation, we're talking about the origins, right? Obviously, you and him had a lot of conversations about the vision, about executing that vision too. What about in terms of, you know, that was great what you said, Jessica, about he never stopped moving. He got his steps in. What other key, I guess, personality traits seemed so essential to the way he was and maybe how that translated to what the space became? I know that there was a fanny pack, right? So that was a big one.
There was a fanny pack. Yes, he definitely had a regimented life in some ways. And I think the irony of that regiment was his limitless creativity and passion for not only seeing the possibilities, but creating it.
And that means in terms of the space, obviously, but also like, as you were saying, Jessica, following him through so that you can get a sense of the way he moves, the way he thinks, the way he's sort of acting his vision out, right? That's kind of how you were understanding it.
I mean, he would just constantly be on the go. You could literally see his brain working all the time, and he would walk into a space and he could visualize what he wanted the space to become. And he aligned himself with a lot of different artists who he could go ahead and say, this is what I need. How can you help me to make it a reality? And so he would just constantly be going and striving for what's the next project? What's the next thing we're going to build? What's the next thing that we can achieve as a community together?
Mm-hmm. And in terms of your, and obviously feel free to, add to that too.
That just touching on what you were saying, Jess, and that's so true, is that Lewis aligned himself with a lot of different tradesmen and artists and vendors in the community, always very connected. And he would write out on these yellow legal pads, drawing what he envisioned like an empty space to become. Like our main showroom was an empty warehouse. And he walked in there. He's like, I'm going to put a second floor and a stage. And because he was so connected to a various number of people who were talented, he was able to put them to work, to build the stage, to put in the stained glass, to put in the plumbing and paint the floor and whatever was needed.
Mm-hmm.
So he, everything that he did sort of talked to each other, you know, creating jobs, creating income for people, building something for the community with this grand ultimate vision of recreating this in other cities. So bringing the good to other cities around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And I would build on both Jessica and Kim's comments. So when you think about the space, it's multiple spaces. And the last two, I think, were just incredible. Casablanca, for example, takes you into a space. It's North Africa, and the movie Casablanca, that's a classic. And when the community comes and they have an event there, they could see that. They could see that vision that Lewis has. And then right next door to it, again, another event space, you could be in New Orleans, Bourbon Street. And so the creativity of multiple spaces really exemplified what his creative mind was and meant to us.
Right. And in the Casablanca room, for example, you have an elephant head. You have the piano. I mean, all the key things that you would expect and you would hope would be in there recreated are there. That's and Kim, right. You mentioned something about the piano, right? There was about the color of the piano.
Oh, jeez.
Some details really painstakingly recreated.
So a frequent process for creating a new space like Casablanca, Lewis would say, I'm turning this into Casablanca. And I go to Google, I print out all the pictures I can possibly find from the movie set of Casablanca. I show them to Lewis, and then he sits down with the artists and vendors and tells him what he wants the building to be like. And there is a piano in there. It's brown. But Lewis was very upset because we didn't get the white piano that was in the movie, in the room for Casablanca. And I'm like, Lou, it's not a white piano. It's a black and white movie. It's actually brown. So
the one in the room is brown.
It's authentic, yes.
You know, we mentioned some of what is able to be seen there, and I guess I mentioned a very small portion of what is actually at Artisan Works. But one thing that really struck me is, you know, cars. There's a DeLorean. There's an old taxi cab. You mentioned your car. Your old car made it in there also, right?
The cream colored Corvair that has never been moved since it entered the building.
So that's just, I mean, what I find interesting about that is so much about when you start to weave in personal history too as well. You can walk through this space and it's not just the artist's work that is there and or whatever may have been gathered in a collection. But for example, yes, it's your old car is there, you know, walls that you've painted, for example, like there are these personal elements. And I think when we were going through recently, sort of the natural endpoint of that is where Lewis's ashes are now. And that's such a big part of this Rochester room, which, of course, pays tribute to Rochester Titans. Susan B. Anthony, Frederick Douglass, George Eastman are in this room. And then there's a space where Lewis's ashes in this beautifully painted urn with angel wings painted behind it. And there, his personal effects are around that as well. So, Kim, you mentioned to me how you had worked with him for the past 2 years, essentially, building this space. I mean, that must have been, I don't know, there's the metaphor of that is so, it's very poetic, right? Like this, you have this man, this was the place, his space, and then here we are, like building the actual final resting place. Can you talk a little bit about that? I know it's a very, you know, talk about that as comfortable as you are, but I found it to be very moving standing there and kind of seeing all that come together.
That is such a good question.
On top of everything else that, of course,
right.
has to, you know.
I think for me, that room is so poignant because it kind of encompassed our business relationship together. You know, always building, always creating, taking care of each other and so many people in the community. And for him to be part of creating that space with me was really meaningful because he's with the people that he idolized from mm-hmm. the city. You know, George Eastman, he used to joke and say, I think that I'm George Eastman reincarnated and, you know, just a real fighter for the city of Rochester. And I think the most important thing about that room is that I feel like Lewis is home. Energetically, he's there with us every day. And as soon as I, you know, we placed him on that pedestal with his ashes, it was just, he's there.
Yeah.
And every place that you look or walk through, there's a memory of, you know, sharing, putting that together with him or straightening that picture or, you know, straightening the rug that's crooked. Like it just, it oozes Lewis and that's forever.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Jessica and Jim, can you talk a little bit about having seen that also maybe the first time? I mean, it's just it's a very overwhelming and I think very positive experience to walk into that room and see that.
All right. Go ahead.
I mean, for me, it was a little bit different because I was there for the start of it. I was there for the middle part of it and I was there for the completion of it. Mm-hmm. So for me, it wasn't like an aha moment. It was more of a, this is so Lewis. Mm. Everything in that room is so Lewis, all the photographs or the paintings done, everything in there is Lewis. So, I mean, the first time I saw it, with him actually there, it was very powerful and moving and just felt like he was home, like Kim said. He came home and the energy in that room is absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. He is there every day with us and it's very powerful.
Yeah, I agree. That was the strength of Lewis. We all participated in the development of that room in some way, and it's a tribute to him to allow us to do that. But yes, he's there every day with us, and we continue to honor him and his legacy. And that is a room that he belongs in with the, as you said, with the Titans of Rochester.
There's something so, I don't know. There's just, again, like as a person who had never met him, being able to see all of his personal effects there. First of all, you have Luciano Pavarotti's beautiful singing filling the space, right?
Mandatory. Which had
multiple rooms in Artisan Works, by the way. It wasn't just that room. I clocked that as multiple rooms. You have his fanny pack, his phone. You have a cigar and some bourbon, his shoes, even an old pair of roller skates. I mean, all these things seemed like a sort of a... they were conveying the, maybe not the totality, but conveying enough about him and who he was as a person. So yeah, it's a definitely recommend seeing that. I just want to go back to maybe a little bit to that idea of Lewis as a builder, and then of sort of Artisan Works and thinking about sort of where Artisan Works is now. Kim, you mentioned, you said he used to say to you, all I did was build it, now you have to turn it into cash, which I thought was very funny. But also, like,
that's,
I don't know.
Pretty literal.
from a practical standpoint, that's such an interesting thing. I mean, that's like a, yeah, how do you figure out how to do that? You just sort of keep the momentum going?
Lewis and I have historically been good at very different things. So I've always been an operations gal. And so when he walks into an empty warehouse, he sees possibility and what he's going to create and what he's going to build. And what I see is, how are we going to pay for this? And what are the steps we need to do to make all those things that you're thinking about happen? So there was always like this natural division of labor that worked for us. But moving into the future and, you know, really fighting for what he created and building upon that, he made it sort of so easy for us because he built this incredible platform where there's literally something for everybody. You don't even have to like artwork to find something that you can love and relate to at Artisan Works. Mm. And that's important. That is the all-inclusive idea. You know, there's something for everyone that we were really trying to achieve. So what we've been working on now, Jessica and our board of directors, Jim, is using the platform that he created to, we're community art space, we're doing community events. On Sundays, we have a thrift sale every Sunday from noon to four. And basically, because we're a nonprofit, we have 25 years of items that have been donated to us. And some of them are on display. Some of them have rooms built around them, like the firehouse that you talked about. That fire truck was donated. So Lewis took our personal indoor parking garage and turned it into a firehouse that's used for event space. But we also have things that have been donated that are in boxes and on shelves and haven't seen the light of day in 15 plus years. So those are the things that we're using to create kind of an art adoption program for our thrift sale. So people who normally can't afford art or wouldn't even consider it can come in and get something real for, you know, anywhere from $1 and up.
Yeah, and as we were in that space where you have the Sunday thrift sales, mm-hmm. we were leaving the space during our walkthrough, and you picked up a set of Japanese sterling silver earrings, and you were just like, how do we have these?
Yeah, beautiful green stone clip-on earrings, and I found them in a box that was on a shelf for, I'm not sure how many years, but I'm like, these are stunning.
And that struck me as a very... Artisan Works moment, yeah. Right? I'm sure that happens all the time.
All the time, yes.
And I'm sure it's not only earrings; it's paintings. It's, yeah. I mean, what I don't even know. I sometimes I fail to think. So we're talking about jewelry, furniture, paintings, sculpture,
right?
Signs.
Yes. Sometimes Lewis would place something on display that had either been, you know, purchased or donated. And I'm there every day. And sometimes I wouldn't see it for months. I'd be like, when did we get this? He's like, oh, that's from last winter. Yeah, but back to your question of the things that we're doing, we're also doing a Thursday night fusion filled with community events. So every Thursday we're doing something. It's either, and Jessica can talk more about that, but she's the band leader on putting together all the different community events. But we just want people to enjoy what's been created and, you know, do community things together.
Yeah, get in the space and see what happens there. Yeah. Okay, with that in mind, actually, we'll talk a little bit about the future and a lot of these community events. First, I just want to, we'll go to a short break. We will continue talking all things Artists and Works here on Connections. We will continue that conversation after this. I'm Patrick Hoskin, filling in for Evan Dawson. Coming up in our next hour, pop star Charlie XCX tweeted, "Kamala is brat," back in July. She was referring both to the eventual Democratic presidential nominee and her own album, Brat, that lent its name to the so-called Brat Summer of 2024. But what was Brat Summer anyway, and what was its impact? We'll unpack all of this with the people who know next hour on Connections. Welcome back to Connections here on WXXI News. I'm Patrick Hoskin, and for Evan Dawson, we are speaking with Artisan Works CEO and co-founder Kimberly Trenholm, Executive Director Jessica Palukowicz, and Board Member Jim Benjamin. Just before the break, we started talking about a lot of what Artisan Works is doing now in terms of community events. So we talked about the Sunday thrift sales. There's also these Thursday night fusion nights, which is a great sort of mysterious name for these. I love them. Jessica, can we maybe talk a little bit about, maybe the idea for that, some of the execution? I mean, I think a lot of it is right to engage the community, get folks in there. How did that really come together? And maybe talk a little bit about how that's going.
So the whole idea around the Thursday night fusions was to kind of go ahead, and we have all this amazing space that we want to be able to share with the community and to connect the community with some really amazing types of events, whether it be a yoga, creative yoga class on Thursday, or we've done tie-dye classes, something for everyone. Kind of utilize the space and do some community outreach so that this can be a place for everyone in the community to come and experience some kind of creativity that fits their niche.
And where does the yoga take place? Just out of curiosity. Not that there's any shortage of space, but I just would love to, for a visual.
The last one we did was in Vertigo Heights.
Okay. And what is Vertigo Heights for folks that haven't been in that space?
So Vertigo Heights is one of our bigger event spaces. It was actually supposed to be a theater. Its original concept was a theater based off of Alfred Hitchcock's Birds. And when they were actually painting the ceilings, which are really high.
36 feet.
Yep. The painters were actually getting severe vertigo.
Oh, wow.
So Lewis decided to change the concept of the room and create Vertigo Heights as an event space. It has a stage in there, screen and projector. It's about 150 to 200 person event space. And it's got things hanging from the ceiling, bicycles, sculptures, fixtures, all at different lengths to create a sensation of vertigo. And so it's about a 99-foot long banquet hall.
Okay, wow. And so yoga happens in there. And have there been other events in there too, and as part of this fusion series, or that was the first one in there?
That was the first one in there, yes.
Okay, but it went well enough, maybe try some new things?
Absolutely.
Cool. Okay, that's cool. All right, yeah, we have Steve from Honeyway Falls on line two. So I'm going to get Steve on here, and then feel free to ask your question, Steve.
Hi, gang. Artisan Works is one of my favorite places to play the piano for different events, and whenever I'm there, I try to count the pianos, and I'm wondering if you have a piano count. I know there's over a dozen.
So I just want to say, Steve, there's counting happening on fingers right now in this room. You can't see it, but that is happening.
Well, I know that we have 9 pianos in storage that are not in use in any of our rooms. Jessica, do you know how many?
We have 10 functioning pianos.
Okay, so we have a total of 19 pianos that we know of.
Okay, you got me beat, yeah.
What was your count?
16.
Oh, see?
There we go. All right, well, I'm glad.
That's a great question. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Steve.
All right.
Because when I was there, I think you said there's a piano in almost every room. So I think 19 would, plus, and you said 10 of those or 9 were in storage. So yeah, I think that would.
Yep.
I didn't count. I should have counted as I went through too, but that feels right to me based on what I had seen.
You're welcome to come back and count for yourself. We could do a Artisan Works scavenger hunt.
For pianos.
Challenge.
That's actually, yeah, that's good. Because, and you think like, oh, it's a piano. It should be easy to find. But they're actually, given everything else that there is to look at and what's in the space, it could be, it requires a keen eye
yes.
to find that. We had someone else called, someone who wanted to remain anonymous, but they were curious about the pool table. Said it had belonged to Lou's father, Bill. Is there a story about what happened to that? Is it still there? Is it elsewhere?
It's actually up in the loft, which is one of our display areas. It's themed after a New York City apartment, but that's still on display, and it actually was one of Lewis's favorite places to play.
Cool.
On that table. He is an exquisite pool player, by the way.
What was it? What was his game? Just 8-ball?
I have no idea.
I don't actually know pool game. I don't know why I asked that. I don't really know different. Snooker is one, maybe? I think I've heard that before.
Well, I could add to that.
Okay. Yes, please do.
Yeah, please do.
So one of his favorite games is 3-ball. So I witnessed that. He beat me at 3-ball with one hand. Tied behind his back.
Gosh.
So that's how good he was, yeah.
Okay, wow. And there's only, so there's 19 pianos. How many pool tables are there?
How many pool tables? There is one.
Okay, so we're up to at least 4, 6?
1, 2, 3.
Wow. So that's actually more than I would have assumed.
Oh, yeah.
I think six.
Six pool tables, yeah. 19 pianos. Okay. By the numbers for Artisan Works is also really, mm-hmm. that could be fun for the scavenger hunt. Yeah, thank you for the callers. We are here at 844-295-8255, toll free. The local number is 585-263-9994, or you can email connections@wxxi.org. We're talking all things Artisan Works. I love that, to go back to just the title of these fusion nights. That's a cool way of talking about, it's interesting. There's my colleague Dan Kushner hosted this show just a few days ago and with some folks who are involved in the Fringe Festival, and they were talking about the idea of like interdisciplinary performances and how that's such like a clunky word and like no one can really, there's not like a great way of explaining. It's like, oh, this is a performance that has dance, but also it's a theater element and someone will be painting in the corner. Like that's a multidisciplinary. I feel like fusion, like that's the word. I feel like we found it. But how did like, so for example, we're talking about yoga in these, in this space, 36 foot high ceilings. What are some of the other events that have been for the fusion? There's like, you said tie-dye, right? Tie-dye making,
we
different
crafts. We
did
tie-dye last week, and the week before that we've done spell jars, and we have gone ahead and done...
Clown class?
Oh, we have a clown class coming up.
Oh, cool.
We're going to have some belly dancing coming up.
Making a bouquet.
Flower arrangements, cake decorating, cookie decorations. We'll do a lot of seasonal things based off of, like, we're going to go into fall, so we're going to have a fall bouquet class, wreath making.
It also includes our vendor fairs.
Correct.
That are a much larger scale, but that includes, like, 100 different vendors and... It's usually around a holiday, or we do them quarterly. That's in addition to the Thursday Fusion, but that's a place where people can come and shop and enjoy live performances. They can get a tattoo. They can buy candles.
Wow. One-stop shop.
Yes.
Yes.
I love this idea, too, of these Sunday thrift sales, folks coming in. I mean, have any of you had conversations with people? Just I love that that visual of the earrings, too, of just like someone coming in. And it's probably like an unusual circumstance where any given item they pick up, you may be able to talk to them about it and where it came from, but you also might have no idea. I mean, does that accurately reflect some of these conversations you've had with folks?
Yes. and if we're not sure, we make it up.
Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes whatever story you could tell is probably very alluring
right.
as well.
But, you know, interestingly, for the most part, collectively, we can remember and put the pieces together for almost everything in that sale because it's all come to us at some point. So we have a memory of that, even if it's distant. Maybe can't remember who exactly gave it to us, but we can remember the artist and a little bit of the story behind it.
And then, so sort of to that point, and I guess maybe the larger thing of this is, in talking about the future of Artisan Works and really building, you're talking a lot about building Lewis as a builder and building on top of what he built. What were the conversations? You sort of mentioned this, Kim, earlier, in conversations with Jessica, with Jim, and the rest of the board members. What have some of those conversations been like, of just about the future? And I mean, it just generally speaking, to build on that foundation, what have been some of the main points or main conversation starters around that among you all in the conversations?
Well, I think that's a great question. And from a board member's perspective, I think that I could speak for the rest of the board that the leadership of Artisan Works is in good hands. I think with Kim and Jessica at the helm, you heard all of these creative things that that we're doing in the space and what you documented in the article. So I really think that it's an exciting time for Artisan Works. And as you said in the article, building on that platform that Lewis created, I think the board is very, very excited about Artisan Works and the future and all the things that you know, Kim and Jessica are doing that's new, it's innovative, it's for the community, and it ties it all together.
What about from like an operations standpoint? I know that's really where a lot of what can be pulled off versus what some ideas might be coming. I mean, are you finding, from the both of you, for Kim and Jessica, are you finding that to be, exciting, like where you're able to maybe put some things into practice now?
Yes. I love the operations stuff. Like that gets me excited and trying the new events. And, you know, Jessica and I have been doing events together for a long time. You know, we started out at the very beginning of Artisan Works organizing these live auctions, you know, and so anything after that is easy, trust me. but I think the idea, the core behind all of our decisions is what we're doing now in line with the future goal of making sure that Artisan Works is self-sustainable, because we are a 501c3 nonprofit, we are self-funding. And everything we have to do, everything we do has to make sense related to creating at least a little bit of income for our future. It's not like there's one magical thing that we can do and it's going to solve all of our problems. We have to create a lot of different avenues of funding so that long term it outlives all of us. The Artisan Work stays and the vision is intact and the next generation will keep it current in a whole new way.
And have you seen folks who maybe have come in, maybe it's their first time in doing a yoga class, that was their excuse to come into the building for the first time. Have you had those kinds of conversations and, I need to come back and check this out, or I will come to the Sunday thrift. So, yes. I mean, I imagine that's a big part of just to get people in.
Yes. I mean, we talk about that any chance we get, about the future vision. And, you know, ultimately, the idea behind bringing in the younger generation and all generations to these different community activities is that they then learn about the different things that we do. Like we rent our venue out for weddings or corporate parties, or we have an art lease to own program. There's all these different things that we can provide a service for. And if there's no one coming to the door, it's kind of hard to promote those things.
Sure.
So.
And I mean, like, we're open Friday, Saturday, Sunday, noon to five to the general public, and you can get a membership and come back more than just once. You can come here for a Thursday fusion event. You can come here for a thrift sale. You can come here and get married, or you can have your corporate holiday party. It's something for everyone within the space that Lewis created.
And to that point, if you drive by or just walk by, you can see Lewis on the exterior of the building as well, alongside such luminaries as some of the Rochester icons we were talking about before, but also with Richard Storms, too, another local artist, which
yes.
I always found. Those are like, they're the two at the table, which is like, yeah, it's a nice.
He's been to our thrift sale, by the way.
That makes sense. You know, that makes a lot of sense, I feel like. We had a question. Someone would like to know if Mordecai Lipschitz's ashes and painting are still at Artisan Works.
Absolutely.
Okay.
They are in, they are safely kept in Lewis's secret, not secret office. It's a room that he called his secret office, but it's where he kept things that are near and dear to him. And one of those items is the urn with Mordecai. So we lovingly honor Mordecai and his ashes, and there Lewis has carefully placed some belongings around the urn.
And you mentioned that the urn that that Lewis is now in is also a piece, it's a vase that had been in your shared office for a long time, right?
Yes. So that vase, it's a beautifully decorated Japanese vase that was on the shelf in Lewis and my shared office for 30 years, and he handpicked that for his ashes, and it's beautiful, and I think it's the perfect selection. However, carrying that vase with him inside of it was something that I don't quite have language for, and it just, I don't know. It was a lot, but
sure.
When I put him on top of the pedestal, I felt like it everything was good in the world again. Like, and I'm ready to move forward, and we've all fought for this, and we're going to keep going.
And there's something interesting about that and that experience being sort of singular to Artisan Works, which is a pretty singular place where items that are there, pieces of artwork that are there, can take on a new light, a new meaning at any given time just based on what they're in relationship to in their or surroundings, right? Okay, this was in this room, we're going to move it, and it totally, that's sort of one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is what you just said, Kim, which is a very, mm-hmm. Profound kind of example of that. But I just love that idea of, to go back to this secret office of, when you have a place that has 40,000 square feet, I'm sure that there's all sorts of fun secret rooms as well. So that has to be also fun, but... I wanted to just to pull out something from when I spoke with April Stein, who artist has a great long history at Artisan Works,
yes.
Key team member as well. She summed up really poetically in the City Magazine piece. She called Artisan Works a psychedelic paradise, which I loved. It sort of gives language to, again, this sort of thing we're talking about that can be kind of hard to define. She also said it was a museum of Lewis's life out loud. But she also said he never liked to call it a museum. What is that description, those descriptions, especially the last one, what does that mean to all of you that knew him so well and worked with him so well? Does that feel like that honors him?
Yeah, absolutely. That was his playground and... but he shared it. It wasn't just for him. It was for everyone. Yeah.
And to that point, like she also mentioned, I just love this so much. I sort of asked her the same question about sort of describing it, right? How do you describe this indescribable place? She said, everybody wishes they could live their first kiss again. I think a first kiss at Artisan Works is the first time you walk through and say, oh my God. Mm-hmm. What Lewis did is he kept creating those oh my gods. He let everybody have their first kiss over and over again when
Beautiful.
They walk in there. Yeah, I mean, is that true for all of you two when you step into the space?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I imagine it must be interesting for you, Jessica, because you're there every day. You are very familiar with the way things look and the way they are. How often do you find yourself having a situation where you're having a moment of, wow, this over here, or I never considered this before?
Almost all the time.
Really?
As we're going through things, we're uncovering new things that I've never seen before, or I can even walk into one of the rooms and just be like, has that always been there? Or did someone just put that there? Was it moved? Did we just accept that in as a donation? Like, where did this piece come from? So it's almost every day that I find something new that I've never seen before.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And that really speaks to, obviously, it's 500,000 pieces, give or take, in the collection. So that would speak to the depth of that. Do you have favorite Artisan Works lore? Like, are there stories about the rooms, about the things? I don't know. It just strikes me as a place that would have some of those.
That kind of leaves me speechless because 4 million stories are just like racing through
how do you pick just one? Are they related more to the rooms or to the items or?
I think for me, it's always related to the experience, because you might walk in and see a wooden sculpture of a toothbrush and a tube of toothpaste. But for me, I look at that and I remember Ross Ryder in his woodworking studio, which is now the Rochester Tribute Room. I remember watching him create that and going to get a cup of coffee and leaving little sawdust footprints through the hallways. And I remember Lewis getting the bill for the wood to create that project and then placing the sculpture where it lives today. But every item has a bigger story for me. And so that's why it's kind of hard, but...
Well, there was also the train story too, right? Where the train tracks were sort of
the train tracks,
right? Yeah,
right. So there are the building was originally the Farrell factory, and they made cannons during the Second World War, and the train tracks go through the building. So the train car would enter through the Blossom Road entrance. Farrell factory would build their cannon or big piece of machinery, and then the train car would exit the rear of the building to the tracks off to its destination. And, you know, people visiting might just be like, oh, why are there train tracks here? But there's like a story for every quirky little thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I loved where that the wooden sculpture ended up that you mentioned, the Ross Ryder, because it's just one of many things that if you were scanning if your eyesight was just scanning, it's like, is that a Salvador Dali? Okay, well, that's sort of in the background, and then here's a giant toothbrush,
right.
And if you walk over this way, there's a whole wall of Kodak collectibles,
right.
And if you walk, oh, and here's a little theater we're going to step into. So yeah, that's why I think it's funny, because after the 2 hours of the tour and then this hour that we just had conversing about it, it's like, yeah, it really, so the first thing I want to do is go back, obviously. But I feel slightly closer to describing it, but it still renders that, that little element of like, yeah, but you still really don't know. Even the photos that our photographer who we were with, Mike, he shot incredible photographs when we were there. I was looking at the photos and I was like, where did you take that photo? Like, I was with you the entire time. We were in every room together, often standing shoulder to shoulder, and I actually don't know where you took this, so you must have seen something. So, yeah, and I imagine many people say similar things.
Yes.
What do we have coming up this week or in the coming weeks that people should know about? Another thrift sale on Sunday?
Absolutely.
Every Sunday?
Yes, we're going to do that every Sunday. And
tonight we actually have a drag roulette show happening in Vertigo Heights as well. And then next week we have a floral class.
Very cool.
On Thursday.
So people should look out for Sunday and they should look out for Thursdays. Those are the fusion.
I mean, I would always recommend just check out our website. We have upcoming events listed on there, all the information for our thrift sales on there. And that's just www.artisanworks.net.
Cool. There it is. Mm-hmm. Just final quick thoughts. Do you all have a favorite piece of memorabilia or favorite piece in the collection? Just one, if you had to pick one.
I think mine would be the Martine Lepore painting that I have in my office. It's a great story. It was hanging in the gallery. I told Lewis it was my favorite piece. He took it right off the wall, took it up
Gave
to
it
my
right
office,
to you?
And put it in my office.
That's very cool. Kim, do you have anything?
And hung it.
And hung it.
Oh, that's nice. Full service.
Yes.
Do you have anything that comes to mind for you, Kim?
My favorite piece in the building is the portrait that Steve Smock did of Lewis Perticone. And it's the feature piece in his tribute room. But I think that he did such a nice job of capturing the essence of Lewis and just his passion.
Yeah. And what about you, Jim, quickly?
Casablanca.
Oh, love it. Being at Rick's Cafe. Cool. Well, I want to thank you three so much for being here on Connections.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. Kimberly Trenholm, Artisan Works CEO and co-founder, Jessica Palukowicz, executive director, and Jim Benjamin, Artisan Works board member. We appreciate you being here on Connections. I'm Patrick Hoskins, sitting in for Evan Dawson. Another hour is coming up next. So thank you for listening to member-supported public radio.